Hey, you guys, Lauren here. It has been a minute since we've recorded a new episode, so I wanted to leave a little surprise for everyone going back re-listening, or maybe you're listening for the first time. If you are interested in our graphic design contract template, you can use the code LOYALLISTENER for 50% off, making it $37.50. This is an awesome, thorough contract I made in collaboration with my lawyer, Kirsty Locke Miller. If you are insecure about your current contract, or maybe you don't have a contract, I would definitely recommend this one. You can find the link at our show notes and use the code LOYALLISTENER. Thanks for your support. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Design Beat, where we share the stories of creative women who dance to the beat of their own drum. We hope you come away uplifted, inspired, and encouraged to go for it. Welcome back. I hope you had a great Christmas, New Year's break. Today, we're talking with the amazing Taylor Mitchell. Taylor is someone I have wanted to be friends with for a long time, so I used the excuse of the podcast to hang out with her. She actually lives really close to me, so she came over to my house, and we just gotta hang out for a little bit, talk all things design and her story, and it was so much fun. We could have talked for hours if I didn't have to pick my kids up from school. We talked about your definition of success, finding your style, how she got into lettering, her favorite method for learning to draw new things. She was so fun to talk to. You'll have to forgive my awkwardness at the beginning. We had one microphone. We were sitting on my couch and we were literally just passing the microphone back and forth. I have learned this is not a good way to do it. It was a lot of work editing. It's still the best quality, but it's still a really great interview and I think you guys are going to love it. Here is Taylor Mitchell. Taylor Mitchell, coming at you from my living room. Our first in-person interview.
So glad to be here.
So glad to be here. We're off to a great start. I had my friend test this earlier and I was like, how close can we sit if we don't know each other?
This is comfortable for.
This is our first in-person interview, as you can tell, and we're just figuring it out, putting the microphone back and forth like a newscaster. So
it's gonna be so fun.
It's gonna be great. Okay, so you've listened to the podcast, right?
Yes, I have.
You've heard rapid fire questions, yes. Which are not rapid at all. We really need to come up with a better name. Okay, first question: what's your favorite snack?
Okay. I have a snack that I've been going to every day, at least recently. I'm all about apples and cheese. You have to have a good Honeycrisp apple. I'm kind of a snob when it comes to my fruit. It really does. And then I love, also a snob probably when it comes to my cheese. It's got to be Tillamook. It's got to be like.
Do you buy like the individual packaged squares?
I do sometimes. But also, it's usually cheaper to buy the block. Yeah. But I grew up in Oregon, and that's where the Tillamook Cheese Factory is, and I've been many, many times.
Yeah, that's like a touristy. Yes. Okay. Yep. Grew up in Oregon. When did you move to, what brought you to Utah?
I came out here to go to school, so I went to BYU. So, like, how many years ago was that? Lots of years ago. Over 10, maybe? Yeah.
Did you meet your husband at BYU?
I did. He's actually also from Oregon. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. Our hometowns are about 3 hours apart. He lived on a coastal town. I lived like right outside Portland. So just kind of coincidence.
Cool. So that's something you had in common.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What shows are you watching right now?
Oh, man. Shows. Parks and Rec is just like on, you know, like we just kind of turn it on here and there. Always. Exactly. I just finished watching Lucifer on Netflix. Is that on Netflix? Real good. Started it with my husband. He fell asleep. And then I just like kept watching it with Adam. And he was like, did you finish all like six seasons without me? Like, yeah.
How long was he asleep for?
Well, I'm very much like, I am a binger and I can stay up super late. He passes out after like an episode. So like the first night, I'm like five episodes ahead of him. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
I can't wait. So I just kept watching it, and I would watch it upstairs and he would watch some horror film that I wouldn't want to watch downstairs. So
both have your shows. I didn't know there were six seasons of that.
I think there is. It was really good.
Really?
I enjoyed it.
It's so nice to have a show to binge.
It really is. Yeah. Because it had been a while since I'd really like binged anything or been interested in anything. Yeah. But
we need a new show to binge. Yeah. We watch Survivor every week.
I haven't watched it since I was like 12, you know.
Yeah,
like,
it's been on forever.
It has been on forever, so.
We just, within the last year or two, like during the pandemic is when we started and just became obsessed. Mm-hmm. And then it's been fun to watch like one every week.
Oh, like, yeah. We've never watched it when it was on TV.
That's
before.
True. You can perfect. Just... You could probably just go forever with that show.
Yeah.
Seriously, there's so many seasons still for us to watch. That's a fun one. Last night we watched Castaway.
Have you not seen Castaway before?
We have seen Castaway. We Googled early 2000s popular movies or something.
Okay. You know, Castaway's not really one I'm like, I want to revisit that. I want to watch him yank out a tooth or something like that.
Oh, it was so cringy. It was good though.
I mean, I know it's a good movie.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it's a classic.
I'm more I just want like some comedy, some rom-com.
Yeah. Oh,
easy going.
Rom-coms.
I'm not really into dramas at the moment.
Yeah, I know. Well,
so
I thought that's like what we were looking for, and my husband Mike, he's like, there was one that just kept coming up on every list. He's like, is it The Notebook? He's like, Castaway. I'm like, what?
Wait.
I was thinking, like, feel good.
Yeah.
Rom-com.
Right.
I don't know. I gotta pick the show tonight.
That's good.
Last rapid fire.
Yes.
What should we call this? It's
so
not rapid.
Rapid
fire. Random question
random.
Box.
I love that. Random question.
When are you most productive?
That's hard to say. Like, I would say mornings. I wake up early and I exercise pretty much every morning. But if I find myself with some downtime, then it's really hard to like get back up. So I gotta like just ride that. And then it's like, well, maybe I need a nap midday, and then around 4 I'm good to go again.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Are you productive at 4?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the status of my children, but like I get another boost of energy usually like kind of towards the end of the day. Again, that's like me thinking when I'm trying to work from home with my kids.
Yeah.
Right? Like if I get a special day where I'm in the office, everything changes, right?
Yeah.
Productivity
is
just immediately higher.
Totally.
When moms get a day in the office,
Big
things happen.
Really?
They really do.
Especially when you've been used to working like with kids, balancing their schedules, dedicated work time.
Yeah. And I even find that like, say I'm at home, I'm just working from home and I don't even have kids at home, I'm still not very productive. It's like stepping outside of the house, going to an office.
To work.
So actually right now I work for my husband. He has a startup, and so I'm just the creative director for whatever the needs are. And so he has just like a little office that I work out of like 2 times a week. So it's
cool.
A couple days.
So what's the company?
It's called Free Play.
Okay.
It's like a fitness company here in Utah. So,
cool.
Yeah.
So you said 2 days a week you work there?
Yeah.
But you could work from home, but it's just nice to have like the... Do you have designers under you, or are you doing most of the design for the company?
So I do a handful of design, but it's a pretty small company, so we just have contractors. So it's actually been really cool to be on the opposite end of hiring freelance designers, because I've always been in that position. But just to see, like, you know, here are our candidates, and the girl that we work with right now works out of Berlin, and she is awesome. And what's cool about that is, like, all of her strengths are not my strengths. And so it's like, oh, I'm so grateful to have you because you fill this hole that I wasn't able to, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, it's fun being on that other side and just kind of seeing how that works.
That's so cool. Yeah. Is this your first creative director job?
Yeah. Yep. I've just been doing freelance really for the past 6 years.
Okay. So. Yeah. So let's dive into that. Tell us about, like, your background, how you got into design, your whole design story up until now.
Okay. So
as much detail as you want.
Say, how far do we want to go back? I would say, like, for me, design really started back in high school. I was able to take a design class and actually got the opportunity, I think I was 17, to work. I got an internship at the Nike headquarters in Beaverton. So yeah, it was their first round of high school internship. In the high school. Yeah. So they went around, to, like, the, you know, all the kind of neighboring high schools, and it was our teachers who recommended us. And then we went through an interview process, and then they picked, one design intern, which was me, and then two fashion design interns, which was two.
Taking design classes in high school?
Yeah. So they had this school, it was like a specialty school that the three neighboring high schools could take different electives at, that would be, like, you know, more, there's just, like, way more options than your school would have. So you would get bussed over to this specialty school pretty much for an elective class. And so they had some awesome design classes there.
That's so cool. I mean, we have anything like that in high school.
Right. I mean, it was very, like, looking back on it, it's very simplified. And I actually got to learn a lot when I was at Nike. And it was more like, this is more to help me as the intern rather than doing anything useful for them. Yeah, it was a really cool experience. And that was kind of the first time where I was like, oh, this is really sweet. And I felt like I really learned. I mean, Illustrator, there's so much to it, but that was, like, my first introduction to, like, really learning it, you know, because you can only,
which is huge,
so in those other classes. But yeah, it was a really awesome experience. So that's, like, going way, way back.
Yeah. But so then you went to BYU.
Yeah, then I went to BYU. I actually studied advertising there, but, you know, minored in design, and it's all kind of, like, wrapped up into each other. Out of school, I got a job at an ad agency here in Utah, and I was actually an account manager, so I wasn't in a creative position, but because it was a smaller agency, I had the opportunity to take on some design projects, which was really fun. And then I worked there until I got pregnant with my oldest, and it was kind of a natural transition to just do freelance for this ad agency that I had been working at. So I wasn't employed by them anymore, but they'd reach out to me with a bunch of jobs. And
you still had that relationship where they knew you and trusted you.
And so, like, honestly, that's just how my freelance career got started. It just kind of came naturally. I didn't go looking for clients. I kind of just already had that set up and had relationships from the people that I worked with there.
So did the ad agency then refer you to other people, or how did you get other clients outside of the agency?
What did happen? I mean, the creative director that did work there, he started his own firm. And so then I did freelance work with him. And then it was just kind of word of mouth. And, you know, once you get, like, some clients that are reoccurring, it was kind of enough. Because, you know, you're a stay-at-home mom and you can only have so much on your plate. Right. So at the time, I just always felt like it was enough, and I never really needed to search outside of that. So
cool. Yeah. How long did you do freelance before starting at your husband's company as creative director?
Oh, that's very recent.
Oh, really? How recent?
Just a couple of months. I mean, okay. So it's my husband's startup. So it's been going on for probably like 5 years now. So obviously I've done a ton of design work for him before we had funding. So it wasn't an official job. It was just like, here, this is your startup. Of course, I'm going to help you with it. And then it got to the point where I was like, this is too much work. You need to start paying me. I mean, it really wasn't until they got funding that I could be paid. And anyway, so this is the first time I officially have this role. But, you know, I've been working on.
You've been helping. Yeah. Did you help start it or was it mostly just his thing?
I mean, I was in it a lot. Yeah. You know, like I would say it's mostly his thing. He's very big into tech. Like that's what his role has always been. And he's just a genius, really. So I would say it's mostly his thing, but I've always been there, especially with, you know, visuals and design.
That's awesome.
If you guys haven't checked out Skillshare yet, you need to. You can learn about pretty much any creative field from the best of the best. And one thing I love about Skillshare is that you don't have to pay per class. You just get a membership and you have access to all of their classes. And it's self-paced, so you can start as many classes as you want. You don't have to finish anything. You can jump around. If you want to brush up on any of your skills or learn something new, Skillshare is a really great place to do that. You can get 40% off an annual membership at the link in our show notes.
So what's your favorite project you've worked on?
Oh, that's hard. I would say, I mean, the best projects are the ones where the client has a design eye, right? Yes. And when you get feedback from them, it's not like, oh, like that cringe. Like, oh, are you sure? How do I make, you know, this fit with, you know, it's when you get feedback from your client who gets it. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And it becomes more of a collaborative thing. So I've had, or clients that are like, yeah, I love it. Let's let's do that.
Isn't that the best? From they're like, great, I'll send you your payment. Right. I love you so much.
This is the best. But honestly, I've really enjoyed pretty much every mural I've done so far. Like
your murals. Are amazing. How did you start getting into murals?
So I actually wasn't even like looking into it or didn't, it wasn't even on my radar, but I don't know if you remember, there was the Love Letters.
Yes. It was before I lived here, so I didn't go to it, but I saw pictures and it was amazing.
So one of the people working on it was Becca Clayson. And I knew her because I went to the very first Letter West retreat. And so I met her there. She's awesome. And so she actually reached out to me asking if I wanted to do a mural. And I was like, sure, I've never done one. You know, I felt comfortable telling her that. And she's like, well, let's, you know, let's do it. And so that was actually kind of the perfect way to start for me, because you're in this exhibit where there's other artists working on their murals too, or working on their setup. And so it's a very like collaborative, awesome experience. You're getting help. It was just like a really good first time thing. Yeah. Like I was right next to Haley Berry, and she was like giving me tips and everything. Like her mural is right next to mine. She is amazing. So it was really cool. She'd just give me little tips. I'm like, okay, good to know. Let's get going.
Okay, I'm also shocked that was your first mural, because I can see it in my head. It was with the book, right?
The book and like the girl.
Yeah. Amazing. How was that your first?
I don't know. It just happened, you know?
So how did they, how much creative freedom did you have with that? Did they tell you to come up with a concept, or did they kind of have an idea of what they wanted you to do?
So they already had the what's your story line. That was their concept. And from there it was like, okay, come up with some ideas. And I think I sketched a couple things out and they liked that one and picked it. So it wasn't like really nitpicky, but there was like a little bit of back and forth on, you know, what designs they liked best. But
cool. And how did you get into lettering?
Honestly, like I kind of got tired of the freelance design that I was doing. Like once I came out of the ad agency, all the work I was doing, or the majority of it, was branding and logos or like marketing material, because I'd been designing billboards or banner ads or, you know, magazine ads. And so I kind of wanted to break free from like all this heavy design computer work and use my hands a little bit more. A friend from college had been posting some hand lettering stuff that she had been doing. And I was like, that's really awesome. I want to do it. And so I reached out to her and said, how do I start this? She recommended some things and I just kind of got started. And, you know, it's just like anything in design. Everything you create at the beginning is trash. Yeah. But, you know, as you just keep going and, just keep practicing, it gets better. So
did you like take courses or how do you start? If somebody wants to start lettering right now, what would you tell them?
I think a lot of books. I think if you want to start lettering, it's hard. Lettering is like a really big, yeah. You know, they're like, what kind of lettering do you want to start? Do you want to start script? Do you want to, you know, be able to do some of this really cool brush work? Do you want to do more like sans serif font? So there's like a lot of places to start. So I think it's deciding like, okay, what kind of styles do you want to go after? I think, you know, at the time that I started, it was probably like 2013, where, you know, the style was definitely like the loopy, yes. Cursive. Yeah. Yeah. And chuggy, right? Very chuggy letters. That was it. Yes. That was the time when that was popular. Anyway, so, you know, I think I probably got started into that, and I bought a bunch of different books, and, you know, I've just kind of been all over the place, and you just kind of settle into like, okay, this is the kind of lettering or the look that I want. But I started out with like grid paper and a light board, and you just, you know, do rendition after rendition. Now with iPads, I think if you get an iPad, not that you need that to start, but that's easier to like be able to sketch and then refine it and everything.
What do you do with the light board? Are you tracing your own,
yes.
What do you call it, outline, wireframe?
Yeah, so what I would do is I would, you know, I'd start with graph paper and I'd, you know, make guidelines and I'd sketch it all out and it would be really rough. And then you put a piece of paper over it and you like refine it a little bit more. And then it's kind of that process of like just refining it. And then what I'd do is I'd, you know, get it where I'd want it. Then I'd get like a nice white sheet of paper, get like a Micron pen and black outline, create it, pull it into Illustrator, you know, turn it into a vector and then go from there. Obviously, now with an iPad, it's a lot simpler and less.
Now it's layers. Bring down the opacity. Exactly. So fast.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's the way I used to do it. But, yeah, the iPad has made it simpler.
Yeah, definitely simpler. That's so cool, though. I feel like it's better to work on paper for some reason, though. Mm-hmm. Harder than the iPad, but, like, that's what makes it better.
I will stand behind that firmly. Like, I had a design class in college where, I mean, it was supposed to be like a graphic design class. And the first half of the semester, we did not use a computer because my teacher was very adamant about like ideas and sketching. They just come out better on a paper. Yeah. And it's just time. You don't have to have anything refined. It's just like getting ideas onto paper. And so it might be crappy, but I think there's more freedom there. So yeah, I will go down with that you gotta at least start with your ideas on pencil and paper.
Yeah. I think I've heard research too that something about your brain, like when you actually feel paper and hold a pen or pencil or something in your hand, you get more ideas. Like, the ideas flow better than when you're staring at a screen. Yeah. And same as when you're reading an actual paper book, you can like absorb it better for mm-hmm. some reason because of the act of like holding the paper in your hand, just yeah. that connection. I don't know. Steph's the one who always has the research.
I believe it. It feels accurate in my life.
I feel like I heard somewhere at some point.
I'm like trying to recall something. I'm like, someone, you know, that said this, and I think they kind of, you know, it's like, yeah. I'm butchering it.
That's sweet. The idea is paper is better. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's hard when you have the iPad. It's hard to choose. Especially with like kids, I don't want to have like my nicer art supplies laying around and for them to get into it, and you don't have to clean up after with the iPad.
Yep.
When I do, it just feels better.
It does.
I agree. 100%.
It's the best. So what would you say to someone who is trying to find their style? I feel like you have your style down. Like if I saw something of yours, I would recognize it, and it's amazing and I love it. So you're welcome. Do you have any advice for somebody who's struggling to find their style?
You know, I think style is a hard thing, because even me, I'm like, oh, do I want this to be my style? Like I just want to explore. And but I think a lot of the stuff that you put out, especially as you get more refined, I think it's really just about practicing and getting more refined. And then it's your style because it's you that's putting it out, right? I think initially when you're practicing and when you're learning, it's really helpful to mimic other artists. And I think that's totally fine. I mean, there's a lot we could go into on like what actually is okay. But like when you're just using it as a learning resource, you are using all these different resources to help you just learn, right? But I think as practice comes and as you keep doing it, your style just comes, right? Sorry, very vague answer. That's not very specific on like do XYZ, but even me, I'm like, oh, I mean, I guess I have a style. I guess most things that come out look similar, have a similar feel, but I don't feel like there was a direct, you know, here's A to B to get there, right? Yeah. It's just experimenting. It's just a lot of practice. It's accepting that things are going to look crappy at first, you know? Yeah. I think it's just the whole process of being an artist, and I think that can start over, you know, it can repeat itself and you just kind of build on it.
What do you do when you feel stuck, when you're not motivated, you're working on designing something or illustrating or lettering and you're just stuck? Do you have anything that you do in those moments?
I'm one of those people that I do have to step away, and I, you know, I'll take it as far as I possibly can. And even if it's like really crappy, I try and say it. I mean, obviously it's different if you're just doing something on your own versus for a client. You have deadlines and things like that. So if it's client work, I push it as far as I can. Even if I think this is crappy, I don't want to turn this in, but say I had to turn it in tonight, let's just push this. And then I step back. And this means I can't be my normal procrastinator self, which is like, I'll give my, you know, I tell the client like, this is how long it will take, knowing that typically my process, I do have to step away. And then I'm able to come back with fresh eyes and take it from there. I think too, like getting advice from others, like I have some good, you know, designer friends that I'll Marco Polo and be like, okay, nothing's working. What do you think? And just having fresh eyes on it. My husband too, I mean, working with him, like there'll be some things that I design and he'll be like, well, you know, XYZ isn't working. And I'll be like, okay, who's the expert here?
I do the same thing.
You know, that relationship is harder, but I've realized like, especially a lot of things I've created lately for his company, it's like, oh, after he gave me that feedback, it really just upped it. You know, like I'm so much prouder of this work. So being humble, I think, to take that feedback. So yeah, when I'm stuck, I have to step away and do something else. And then just getting advice from people that I know will help, right? It's not just about getting people who like boost up my confidence. Yeah. It's people who give me honest feedback. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's good too. Just usually not in this situation where you're stuck.
I do the same thing with my husband. And I do feel like that feedback from somebody who's not a designer is very helpful, because really most of the time you're designing for non-design people. I mean, to a point. Sometimes there's a purpose and a strategy behind it, what I'm doing, but it is good to have outside non-design people give feedback as well. And so nice you have design friends. Yes. Where do we find these design friends?
So I love, well, so one of my really good friends that I like, we always get together and just, you know, like feed off of each other with that design. We actually met at the ad agency that I worked at. She was a designer there. And then other friends, it's just kind of like going to events and like Letter West, I went to the retreat and then the conference, you know, going to things where it's like networking. I know people don't like networking and like, when you think about that word, you're like, barf, I don't want to network. But the reality is going to events and meeting people and learning about them and creating connections. Like, I love that. That's one of my favorite things. And so in a sense, that's networking. And I would say that the majority of the like awesome jobs that I've gotten is because of that. You know, it's not because of like, you know, I have this many people on Instagram following me. It's, you know, I went to this, I met someone really cool, and somehow that connection got me this experience. So
that's awesome. Yeah. If I think of it as making friends,
yeah,
I can do it.
Yeah, that. Yeah, don't think of it as networking. I just kind of.
Well, I don't know what it is about that word. I just imagine like handshakes and right? business cards and
yes.
Not my sweatpants, I'm usually. Yes.
Yeah. But I think it's been hard since COVID because you don't have those big things. And I know we probably have a lot of introverts out there. Like, yeah. I think isn't everyone an introvert to some degree? Maybe not everyone. But I think, like, you know, I have introverted parts of me. It is. Yeah. Especially when you're a mom and you've been out of, like, socializing for a while.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is wrong with me? I can used to be able to talk to people. But I think getting out and just, like, getting used to it. And I actually do really love it when I can step away. And I think, too, if I don't have my kids or my husband, I can only rely on myself. I usually use them as like a safeguard in social situations. Yeah. So any of the like design things or business things I attend where it's just me, I like feel really, I don't know, empowered. Like I know how to make friends on my own again.
Yeah.
Oh, person too, yeah, an exactly. Individual.
Individual.
Totally.
Sad, but that's very true.
I know. I love having my husband with me, but I do tend to like, yeah. Whisper in the corner and like inside jokes and rely on him too much.
Same.
When I feel like we switch off being the social one, and a lot of the time it's him.
Yeah.
But if I'm by myself, I totally agree. I'm like, okay, I get brave and I notice other people more too, like making them feel
yes.
comfortable. Same. I kind of step outside myself.
Yeah, agree. And I think like my husband goes to work every day and he's, you know, meeting new people and he's making connections and like it's just normal.
Yeah.
And so I think that just kind of goes along with like things that you do more often become easier for you,
yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And so if meeting people is hard, well, maybe like put yourself. Yeah, some people
just so hard to hear.
But I've just made some really good friends. Really, that's what it is, you know, at any of these events that I've attended, which is awesome.
That's so awesome. I've been wanting to go to more
events.
We moved to Utah from Idaho. We're from Rexburg, okay. Idaho. Not a lot. A design, not a big design scene over there.
Yeah.
So moved here, COVID hit like 6 months later.
Oh man.
So I feel like things are just starting back up again, but even they're not full force
no.
yet either. Like
no.
There's not, I don't know. There's not a lot going on. And so it kind of feels like a lot of pressure whenever I do hear of something going on.
Yeah.
So what's something you wish you could tell yourself when you were starting out?
I think there's a lot of things I would tell young Taylor. and even Taylor throughout all the stages, not just starting out. But I remember being in college. And I did an advertising track at BYU. And it was kind of taught that they're like, this is the one way to be successful in advertising. And not like they said it explicitly, but there was just like this pedestal held up for anyone who went on after to like a giant ad agency in Chicago or New York. Like that, and, you know, came up with these creative ideas. Like, I think someone from BYU came up with, like, you know, they would just spout off, like, oh, this grad came up with this idea for this giant brand, you know, and this is what success is. Yeah. And so coming to the end of my schooling there, I remember being in, it was like a group project and we were all meeting. And I remember my path was not looking like this ideal, this is success. And I remember one of the guys, we were kind of just talking about like what everyone was planning on doing after school. And he kind of made a comment like, you know, there's so many ways to be successful with this major that it doesn't have to look like this, right? Yeah. And I think like I forget that. Like I learned that then, and then like within the course of my life, I keep forgetting that lesson. Like I think especially with social media, we see like this person, they have found success. Yeah. And this is the way to it. Like that is what success looks like as a designer, as a lettering artist, as a muralist. Like, yeah. That's it. Like, well, how else? They're done. Yeah, that's what I want to be. So what did they do to get there? And in reality, like design, lettering, you know, whatever it is you're doing, there's so many different ways to find success. There's so many different avenues, so many different niche.
I never know.
Anyway, there's just like so many different avenues, and I think that's a lesson I have to remind myself of, is like you see these people having success, especially when it's success on social media. Yeah. Is that really success? Sometimes it is, and sometimes there's people who, you know, are really successful designers or artists who have a baby following, but they just don't care.
Yeah.
And so I get wrapped up into that a lot. So that's like a lesson that it's like, okay, I learned that back then, but I keep needing to remind myself of that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we could even go into like, well, what is success even, right? Like success can be different for each different person. And so I think that's, yeah, a lesson I would definitely tell myself. And I think too, like, believe in yourself already, okay? Yeah.
Yes, right. Believe in yourself already.
I think isn't that everyone who needs that lesson starting out or even along the way? Like, okay, you can do this. Yeah. And the thing is like, things are going to suck at first, but that's part of being a beginner. Yeah. Like, I think when we kind of forget, that it's okay to be a beginner. Actually, it's the only way to start something. You have to be a beginner and you have to suck, and that's okay. Don't stop, right?
Yes. Morgan Rapp posted something. It was a list, like, your first podcast episode will be terrible. Your first launch will be terrible. Just like listing all these things that we set high expectations for. And that always comes to mind when I'm starting something new or I don't know what the result will be. I just think like, it's probably going to be terrible because it's my first.
That's okay. This is my first podcast interview, as I was telling you. So everyone out there, if it's terrible, you know why.
No, it's going so good.
And I've accepted it.
No, not terrible. That's so good, though. And I think it's a good way to, I don't know, if you're looking at someone and you think that's what success is, I think it's a good way to look at yourself and say, oh, this must be what I think success is. If I'm looking at them and think they're successful. And now it's interesting how we all have a different definition of it.
For sure. And we probably all have different people that we look up to and say, I want to be like that. Yes. What is that? Like, you only see this outside appearance. Like, you don't know what is really in their business, how much they're really making, how, you know, there's just so many different things that you can't see from the outside. And so comparing yourself is just silly. But we all do it. I do it. Okay. I'm saying it's silly, but I get wrapped up into it. And so it's just, I think it's just that constant reminder, like, okay, it's silly to compare myself. And even people who have so many similarities to myself, I, you know, you just have to remind yourself that, like, even if all these variables are the same, you're still a different person. Yeah. And there's still so many different unique things about you that can affect where you are in life or what your struggles are, or what you're, you know, what you're good at. And so, yeah, I mean, we all know it's never good to compare yourself.
Totally. But I feel like it's something I have to remind myself every single day.
All the time. Don't we all? I mean, if you don't, like, way to go. Tell me you're
good for you. Because it's definitely a constant creeps up. And social media is hard that way where you see a name and a photo and a number. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I didn't realize this person was that successful, but they have this huge following, so they must be. Or oh, I thought this person was more successful than that, but they only have 100 followers. They must not be. Which is insane.
It's just
an app.
It is. I actually am like... I'm so over it right now. I mean, we go through phases, but I think, like, especially, I've been reminding myself, and actually I haven't posted in, like, it feels like years. I don't know how long it's been. But I kind of just said, you know what? I'm not going to get into this real crap. Maybe that makes me old. But I'm like, nah, pass.
Okay, I know. I've been feeling so much pressure to do that. Or I'll go to post something and I'm like, it has to be a video or else it doesn't matter.
Or it's the algorithm, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
What happened to just making things because this is what I love to do? Right. I don't want it to mess with what I want to do for a living.
Yeah. I think what I've kind of come to realize is social media, Instagram is just a tool. And we talk about it like that. Yeah. And I think sometimes we think, well, it's the tool. This is the only tool. No, actually, it's just like a nitty bitty tool. And I think part of it is like, okay, what do you want? What is your outcome? If your outcome is, I want to have these brand collaborations, okay, maybe you do need to build up a big social media. But if it's just, well, maybe I don't want it. Maybe it doesn't matter if it's like a visual collaboration. What if I just want to work with this company? It doesn't have to be through social media. You reach out. There are like so many other avenues to get the work that you want. So if you're also feeling like, oh, this social media crap, I just can't do it, realize like that's not the only way to get there. Yeah. Like, I think it's good to have a presence, but I don't think it's necessary to like, I have to have the schedule. I have to do these reels with, you know, whatever your goal is, right? Obviously, there are certain goals. If that's what you really want, maybe that is the tool that you need. But I think we forget there's so many other tools that can get us to maybe what our goals really are, you know? But we're just kind of shoved that message that, like, got to have a big following. You got to grow it. This is how, again, what we were talking about, this is how you find success. When in reality...
And I think people make it, totally. And I think people make it look easy, too, like... Oh, this is just a free app and I just didn't even do anything. I just posted one photo every day and I just blew up overnight and now I'm so successful. It's like, oh, shoot, well, maybe I should be doing that too if it's that so easy. But it's like, for me, it's emotionally draining. It's like, I wish it wasn't, but I deleted the app off my phone, which I do like all the time. Just because I wanted a break and I was going to re-download it on Monday, but I just like not having it. I just downloaded it on my iPad, which I don't have with me all the time. Yeah. So if I need to check something or post something, I can for the podcast. Yeah. It's been so nice. And I just love, I've said this before, I love when there's somebody who has a successful career who doesn't use Instagram. Yes. I'm like, thank you. Thank you. It just, I hate feeling trapped in like, this is the only option. Yeah. You have to do it. Mm-hmm. So when somebody doesn't, I'm like, oh, thank you. Yeah. I want it to be a choice and I want it to be fun. Whenever I'm having fun with it, like I love doing like design challenges or just like a silly video with my husband that we see and we want to like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If it's fun, then I'm in. But if not, my soul dies very quickly.
Maybe you should pass on that.
And like, you can tell too when people are just showing up just to show up because someone told them they need to and they don't actually want to be there. Mm-hmm. You don't have to.
You shouldn't be creating art for social media. That is the most draining way to create art. And it's unrealistic to, you know, come up with new things and post new things all the time. And yeah, I'm over it. So
me too. I'm in a phase where I need a break.
Same.
Maybe I'll come out of it and want to make stuff again, but
right, yeah, maybe I'll post here and there. I mean, I did run into someone the other day who was like, I haven't, you know, seen what you're up to. I want to see. And that's the kind of stuff where it's like, oh, I want to post to show you. You're my friend, or you're a person who like cares what I'm creating, just wants to see my stuff. Like, mm-hmm. That's what I want. Not because, yeah. And I have to be reminded that, because I'm, like I was saying, I'm one of those people that really loves like being in person and connecting.
Yes, me too.
Like doing it over digitally is, I don't know, makes me more anxious, or just, yeah. I just don't feel the connection. So when I'm reminded, like, oh, you guys are real people, yes, that care real about the stuff that I create, I'd love to like show you what I'm doing, yeah. You know?
If that's what it's about, like not just keeping your art to yourself and sharing it with people, mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
For sure. I'm down with that.
Yeah, me too.
So do you ever like challenge yourself to draw every day, or how do you keep creating? How do you motivate yourself to keep creating?
I have challenged myself to like do, you know, XYZ every day, and I always just fall off that train, which I don't understand, because there's some other challenges I'm like really good at sticking to, but for some reason I think I usually fall off. But I have a sketchbook. I have many sketchbooks. I'm one of those people that like you just, yeah, hoards them, journals, sketchbooks. But I think one of the best ways for me to be consistent is to not think of my sketchbooks as anything precious. Like, I can just put crap in here,
yeah.
You know, and then it just makes it like, oh, I'm going to scribble this, yes. You know, I'm going to draw this little thing, this little trinket, or, you know, I'm going to make something crappy, but I'm still doing it. And when you make, I think that's like the best way to create a habit is like make it as simple as possible. Don't like complicate it. And so I think, obviously, I get in ruts where it's like, whew, when was the last time I like really created, you know, not just as like a work project, but like just created. But then when I am in those times where I feel like creative juices are flowing, it's just because I'm allowing myself to just draw crap. And some of it's good, right? Yeah. But the pressure of it, like nothing has to look good. I don't have to show a single person.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes I think about, I've had people like flip through my sketchbook before and I'm like, oh, wait. It really is. But just to think like, okay, nobody has to see this. I'm just going to draw whatever I want to draw. And then I think from there, some real gems can shine through, and I might take that and, you know, revisit it and fix it up, and then, you know, you create something actually really awesome. But I think that's like my key is just no pressure, you know.
Yeah. I do so much better when I have that in mind. I've tried to do, I like challenges, like I think I'm gonna do one, I don't remember who posted it, sorry, I'll tag you on Instagram, but there's like a Christmas one I want to do where it's just like for fun, draw this Christmas thing, all these prompts. But whenever I set, we're actually going to do an episode next week with my husband on goals and like different types of goals you can set and stuff. I've just noticed for myself, if I have too much pressure, like I have to do this amount of this thing by this date, mm-hmm. Oh, there's no way. I just end up hating it. It's like I'm too rebellious or something. I don't know. I'm just like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. Like I have I challenged myself to draw 100 faces to get better at faces. Mm-hmm. I'm getting close. I think I'm in the 70s now, mm-hmm. But I just don't want to draw faces anymore. Like, I thought it would be like, oh, I'm so glad I did that. Now I have this awesome face style, and it's just so easy. And, like, I have gotten better and more comfortable drawing faces, but that limitation just... Sometimes it can be good to design within limitations or draw, but I feel like you just got to know when to ditch it and not force it, which can be hard.
It can be. I actually, if there's something specific I'm wanting to draw, like a lot of, like you'll see a lot of tigers kind of in my artwork. Like I will draw pages and pages of tigers. Like how many different ways can I visualize this? And that's really helpful for me. And obviously it's kind of the same thing. Like, okay, there might be like two or three in there that are, these are gold, or these are a really good place to start. But I find the more I draw, and it's usually in one sitting, like I'm just going for it, you know? And the more I draw, the more like I iterate, it's kind of the same thing. You can just draw more freely and creatively, and again, there might be only one thing that comes out of it, but usually that's like one of my favorite practices to do. Yeah. Is just like, let's make a goal to fill like 3 pages worth of tigers.
Yeah. I love that. And I feel like that is a good way to create with low pressure, because you can be like, oh, I just have to make a teeny change to this one, or just instead of like starting from scratch, you know, just, oh, I want to do the ears a little different this time, or just make small changes.
Yeah, you take it and you're like, oh, well, what if like this nose is this shape, or, you know, you're just changing little things, and you're just able to flow a lot better. I am, at least.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a good idea. Okay, we have time for one last question. What projects are you excited about right now?
So I actually am working on getting into like the licensing world, which I'm real excited about. Really, that's awesome. So I'm looking at designing some wallpaper for a company that will be licensed. And so I just, it's exciting because it's kind of like my first thing breaking into that world. And that's really been my focus of lately, which is probably why I haven't been like doing much else, is I've been saying no to a lot of things. And I'm like, this is, I want to try this avenue, you know, and see how it goes. And so, I'm really excited about that project, because it's just like my first little dip into this new world of licensing.
What's the company?
So, oh man, I cannot remember the name, but there it's someone I know who's starting a new company.
Oh, okay.
So it will launch next spring.
Okay.
And that's going to bother me that I forgot her company name. I'm so sorry. It's brand new.
We'll post it on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Is there anything, before we wrap up, is there anything you want to share, plug? Where can we find you on social media?
So I am just TaylorKMitchell.com, Taylor K. Mitchell on Instagram, and it's TaylerKMitchell. So not the normal spelling of Taylor. So that's where you can find me. I mean, that's pretty much it.
Well, this is awesome. Thank you for being my guinea pig for an in-person interview.
It's so
your
fun.
Patience.
I love in-person things.
Being in my messy house. Okay. Thank you. Bye. All right, for all things Design Beat, you can follow us on Instagram at Design Beat Podcast, or visit us on our website at designbeatpodcast.com. We'll catch you next week.